Silence. Good morning. I'm Rob Shakespeare, and I have you can see the topic towards automating visibility metrics. I'm a lighting designer by practice in theater and in architecture, and I've had the privilege of working with this group called Designing Visually Accessible Spaces for about 4 years now. It's a team made up of vision specialists, computer scientists, cognitive spatial specialists, and they needed a lighting designer and simulation person, and so that's I joined their ranks. And it's been a fascinating journey learning more about what all of us have something to do with, which is seeing the consequences of the choices that we make. I so appreciate the work that I see in the Radiance community that has to do with daylighting, the stewardship of our planet, you're saving energy. And I hope that, from my perspective, finally it's the occupants of those spaces and the quality of life that they're going to experience and what they see which will really be the mark of your human interactive success. And so I want to start this presentation with a little reminder about human vision, the thing by which we see the world around us, and in an attempt to be inclusive with it. Right now, most of the metrics that we know about in vision you as a community, particularly the daylight community, your knowledge of glare, and you're trying to reduce it from the environment as you optimize the use of the sun, is based on 20/20 vision. It's based on normal vision. And there is an increasing number of persons in this world, and I'll get to this a little later on. But in the U.S. population, it's determined that by the end of this decade, there will be 6 to 7 million people who are categorized under the terms of low vision. And there's no accommodation for that yet within our building codes, within our environmental codes. And these are people who are really active. You know, we're past the days of low vision being retired people sitting in rocking chairs, right? We're an active society. And there's a bulge in that age group, and somehow we need to be we should be accommodating their safety needs within the environments that we have, that we're designing and working with. I like Nicholas's term that he used earlier, spaces and places where there's a spirit of well-being, and I'll add to that the word safety, where hazards can be seen and negotiated and navigated around. So that's a little background just to paint the way for what I hope will be somewhat interesting in the next few minutes. Okay. I have no idea why.
It doesn't want to go forward.
No. I'm watching it change here. Greg, come on, you're a computer guy.
It's PowerPoint. Try clicking the mouse instead of using an arrow. Is it still not working?
This was working fine before. I can't do my whole thing just with one slap.
Maybe the kiosk mode is not for us.
I know. Maybe I should turn something off.
You can't get to the menu even because it's the...
I can just do that.
So you're just going to have to deal with the fact that it's
that's
on
great.
There. Sorry.
Yay! Okay. I'm a theater guy, right? So we practice this stuff a lot backstage, so an audience never gets to experience the technical difficulties. So you're having a backstage view of a rehearsal, all right? industry, and I'm speaking obviously from a North American perspective here, but my assumption is that some of these conversations should be global, and probably are. Industry is speaking very loudly about some of these new needs. The Illuminating Engineering Society of North America is slowly moving towards illumination-based, luminance-based metrics. In the past sort of 15 years, if you look at the great big thick books that they put out and guidelines, you'll see continually these developing charts of luminance relationships. But still, most lighting is based on illumination. ANSI and the IESNA have put out a report about 3 years old now, which targets recommended practice for the elderly and for the low vision community. This is exciting. It's a first step into this area. But for the most part, the focus of that whole report and recommended practice is on retirement homes. It has nothing to do with subway stations and airports and shops and malls and places where people frequent along with fully sighted people. So it's coming along, but it seems to be exclusionary in some way. The American Disability Act, maybe the DDA in England, I'm not sure what the European version is now working with the Illuminating Engineering Society, the National Institute of Building Sciences, and others to explore building codes to address the needs of low vision. And so in response, a leading illumination engineer and software developer and an industry partner talks about our project. Actually, a member of our team now is an industrial partner, the DIVA project, designing visually accessible spaces, that's our acronym, is critical to visibility building code standards development. I think the best way to speak of our scope is to quote another one of our industrial partners. This happens to be MGA Associates, a large architectural firm in Philadelphia. "While architecture as a profession stands at the forefront of handling issues of universal access, we have not encountered a means of early detection in the design development stage that can adequately address the requirements of the visually impaired. The DIVA modeling platform is of great value, allowing an iterative process that incorporates visibility analysis into an evolving design." In the past, when code issues come up, there's a panic in the architectural world. How am I going to be impeded from doing the things that I want to do? And of course, then there's a responsibility to meet the code. So there's typically a lot of resistance. We're being very encouraged by some of these industrial members who are saying, if we have tools such as the sort of thing that you're striving for, we can see how we can embrace a broader part of our community. Right now, we're just guessing at what we do. So we're going to move to a little bit of vision. These are my daughter's retinas. they're pretty fresh. She has normal sight. They're healthy retinas. The lenses in front of them are healthy. The irises are healthy. The optic nerves are healthy. Her cognitive system is healthy. She sees 20/20 vision. Low vision, these happen to be some less than healthy retinas, partially functioning lenses and irises, which form a large part of the low vision community. It's something that cannot be easily corrected. LASIK surgery doesn't fix some of these deteriorating parts or underdeveloped parts of the visual system. So it's not like there's a medical fix for this. There needs to be an environmental embracing of persons who have some of these issues. And it includes you. Aging alone moves each of us towards decreasing visual function. And I think we can see from this chart that if we compare relatively the vision or the amount of light that hits the retina of a 25-year-old and look at a 45-year-old, there's a 30% reduction. Look at a 65-year-old, there's a 40%+ reduction of just retinal stimulants. Right? So we're all on this boat together. You age, the total light transmission decreases, pupil gets smaller. Some of the cones and rods misfire. You get a bit of sludge floating around in there. Light comes in, it scatters a little bit more. You probably all have grandparents who maybe are a little nervous about driving at night. You know, these are issues that are part of us. And add to this the fact that we live longer as humans nowadays. There are more elders, sort of, you know, those of us with gray hair. And no one escapes this. So it's fine to put low vision in this little category, them over there who wear the thick glasses, right? It's an integral part of our culture. And that's where... That's what created this project that I'm part of, that's part of our overall goal, is to integrate something into the system rather than impose it into the design system. So here we're going to have a few visual basics. So you're allowed to open your envelopes now, and you may need to share some of these things. There are several components. I'm going to take 5 minutes. We'll have a little vision class, all right? If you happen to wear glasses, you might actually take them off to see. Most of us who wear glasses don't really know what our vision is. What we know is that we're being corrected towards something called 20/20 vision, a particular acuity. I'll go over in a minute. So you might discover by taking your glasses off. Now, you'll find also that's in your package is a folded piece of white paper. It's about a half inch wide. That's 14 inches long, and that's the distance at which this chart should be viewed. Okay, did you find a little piece of folded white paper? I hope you did. There you go. All right, so I see some of you have got it. So, hold it 14. This is for viewing with one eye, right? So you can close the other eye. Have a look. Hold it at about 14 inches. That's about this distance, right? I don't know what that is in metric. I think we're okay in this light. I think it's going to, you know. And then look, find the row which you can read. The smaller you can hold it up. What row can you actually read, and at what point does it get blurred, right? So the last row that you're able to read. Go across to the right, and obviously it's not the resolution of this camera or on this projector, and see what it says. 20/20. So anybody get 20/20 vision? No. Oh, we got two, three. Okay, let's go to 20/40. How are we doing with 20/40? Anybody got? Oh, a few of us. Anybody a little higher? Actually, lower acuity. These two numbers, you divide, you get a smaller and smaller fraction. So if we say lower acuity, the higher up on that chart. Now, when I happen to take my glasses off and do that test, on my right eye, I have 2100 vision. That means I can read maybe the second or third thing down from the top. My glasses bring me back to 20/20 vision, right? So, normal vision is 20/20. What you're testing is your visual acuity, right? And most of you should know this. You deal with light and people. But just as a reminder, visual acuity has to do with the finest detail that you can see before it blurs out. And our cultures typically say, we want you to be 20/20, hence they conform me by wearing these glasses so that we can all see the same way. I would rather you see the world as I see it. Right, and then you get to wear the glasses, but you know that's not the way it worked out. So that's the word acuity.
I'm doing
It's the measure of the smallest detail. Okay, you have a paper one in there.
This may be less successful, but hold it at the same distance and give yourself an eye test. The white is more gray. The black is more gray. So obviously we're changing the contrast of the field. And I think if things work out well, you should not be able to see as far down that chart as you did with the black and white chart. So in other words, contrast has affected your acuity. Right? Contrast has affected acuity. That's an important factor. So it demonstrates that contrast and acuity are very tightly bound to each other, right? Stay with me now. There's going to be a test, all right? Okay, I also put a piece of black or gray filter in there. So if you put that over the chart, right, over the black and white chart, and this is just a metaphor, I think, ultimately. In this example, the black stays black, right? And it's the white that is being grayed down. This is obviously a special case of contrast. The other extreme would be that we make that chart so bright that it all looks white to you, right? I mean, we could do both those extremes. Those are what we call the thresholds of vision, right? And we're working in between those thresholds. So we need to know what's the point where it's so dark that there's no longer any visual stimuli. And what's the point that it's so bright that I can't get the information which I need? That's what you are using typically in the terms of glare, right? It's a disability of vision. This is a chart that you probably have seen as well. It's a contrast sensitivity function. And what you have on this side is a manipulation of contrast of the black and white component from 100% contrast, which if that were black and that were white, from the projector would be 100%, right the way down to like a 0.5% by the time you get to the top of the chart. And the other thing that's going on is that we have an increased number of cycles or a compression of a sine wave moving from one side of the screen to the other. If you saw by contrast alone, without the acuity factor, you would see, and I don't know with the quality of the projector, I've got to stand back and see if it's working, you would see a straight line across that chart. The fact that you're seeing that there's sort of a U-shaped curve, though I have, you know, there's some banding going up at the top there. But the fact that I think you're seeing basically there's a U-shaped curve and then we get some artifacts that are showing up in the projection. See that curve like that? Yeah? Oops. That's your, that's the human contrast sensitivity curve. That curve that you're seeing on the chart is your vision. The chart itself has bars going equally all the way up. So there's this very interesting bound relationship between acuity and between contrast. And it's that curve, that function, which is pretty critical to understand when you're looking at what can somebody see or not see, right? A radiance picture doesn't necessarily show you what you can see and what you cannot see. It's not processed for human vision. We'll talk about PCONs in a little bit. The sensitivity, the thing that you're most sensitive to is something like 2 cycles per degree. Now, there's another piece of paper in there. And it's got some black lines on it. When I did this, I designed it to be held at my arm's length. So hold it at arm's length, and then look at it through the piece of diffusion media. You'll see that there's a piece of frosted material. Put it that fairly close to your eye. Put it fairly close to your eye, and look at the black and white chart. And if you push it far enough away, if you've got short arms, it's not going to work. But if you push it far enough away from you, it essentially becomes gray. You lose most of those lines, correct? All right. That happens to be 3 cycles per degree when you're holding it out here and looking at it. And that blur that you're putting in is 2200 vision. In the United States, that is legal blindness. So if you were to walk around with that piece of frosted material in front of your eyes, around this room, going to have lunch, mind you don't walk too close to the canal, right? That's 2200 vision, legal blindness. You're not allowed to drive, thank goodness. And that is in the core of the low vision world. But there's a lot of visual sensitivity still. You could probably, you know, figure out that I'm standing in the front of the room. Big shutters haven't shut down over your eyes and you're in a black world. You can see stuff. This is what we are working with, is can an environment be designed in a way for you with 20/20 vision that can also accommodate somebody safely walking around with the vision of that blur foil or diffusion held in front of your eyes. And, we're not telling an architect how to do this. What we are working on is a tool that will present to an architect how they're doing with their particular design. Are things visible that should be visible? I mean, hazards like a step down or a step up, right? A ramp. A bench, something that you might trip over as you're walking around an environment. Are they visible or not? And we're not telling the architect how to make them more visible. We say work within the vocabulary of your space and try some things until you're satisfied that it looks and feels and has the integrity of your design, but it's also accommodating the needs of some others. So that's the principle of the tool that we're working on. This is a little bit of a hack, but again, I just want to make the point about these cycles per degree. If, for example, the one on the end was 20/20 vision, and we just sort of blur through here as you begin to see, you know, what happens as you get deeper and deeper into low vision, and finally, you know, yikes. Can we design environments for this? Maybe not. But at least for some of those earlier ones, I hope we can accommodate their safe navigation of a space. And again, we're not talking about a space everybody knows well. We're talking about, you know, public space. We're talking about a place you don't frequent often, a place where you don't have a lot of knowledge about where you're going within it. And you know, those are the large projects in this world, airports and subway stations and, you know, the mall where you do your shopping. In the mid-90s, a group of people, which included Greg, Jim Ferwerda, Pete Shirley, some others, developed some exciting new algorithms based on lighting simulation of environments. And the image, through image manipulation and tone mapping and adding artifacts, strive to indicate the adapted appearance of a scene, the visually adapted appearance of the scene. That's what PCON strives to do. The images are not data sets of how someone would actually see a scene. It's an interpretation or a representation. So our research is not particularly striving to improve upon that tone mapping environment to produce images that appear to be what a 20/40 vision would look at. We found that, you know, is that ultimately helpful in the task that we're trying to perform? If I have prior knowledge of a scene and now I'm looking at it blurred, right? I'm going to say, yeah, I think that's where that door is, right? what our goal is to is for you to feed your image into our system, and we turn back to you a score and a place. These things are not visible, and these things are likely visible with this type of vision.
Right.
So that's why we're not working on the output side. So some of the things I'm going to show you today are mock-ups, because to show you our data sets, our image data sets, are far less informative. Our data sets are there for us to try to technically analyze in the background based on things like their contrast sensitivity function. So that's just sort of a bit of disclaimer that the pictures I'm going to be showing are not trying to show you how a low vision person really sees. They're a mock-up that suggests how they might see, but I think it'll all fall together at the end of this. So it's a pretty challenging task. I mentioned already that there's a multidisciplinary team, scientists, engineers, design practitioners, some industry partners. It's built heavily upon clinical trials. I find this an extraordinarily slow-moving project as a designer. You know, I'm sort of, you know, trying to crank out my choices. Once they come up with an idea, it goes into the lab. They get 50 people with normal vision and put blur foils in front of them. And if they think they're getting close, then they bring in a subset of people with low vision and have them run the experiments to really see, is that how the world is really seen? How does that change the algorithms that we're using for prediction? So it's a very slow process. What does the user interface look like? How can it be accepted by the design community? Right now it's pretty science-looking in terms of what we're doing. So here's just a summary of our goals. We're working, and we're suggesting that environment should be safe for someone up to 2600 vision. At that level of low vision, that's the point that you find people will start using a stick or an aid, a seeing eye dog. And prior to that sort of vision, there's a sort of a stigma about I'm not going to wear that white cane, right? There's a reluctance to do that. And that is, from that point to full vision, is the community that we're trying to address. So we're not trying to get the super blind in this, but we're trying to address, you know, a fairly large chunk of persons with low vision. So back to vision and visibility. This is approximated to 2400 acuity. And this is a small model that I made of the Art Institute in Chicago's new building. I don't have permission to do this, so I just did it. I don't have access to their full data sets or their ground plans. I just observed something there and decided I think this would be an interesting challenge for my colleagues to analyze to see if they can find some of these problems. This happens to be at something like about noon. So let's take a walk. This is a step through, about every 30 inches. You know, it's not a long stride because you're not striding with confidence because you have 2400 vision. You're probably getting an orientation from this edge. So you're probably not going to do a diagonal cut through the room. And you're assuming that that dark space at the end is likely the entrance to the whatever it is you're going to attend, right? So you take a little orientation, you have a look around, and off you go. Oh, you start to maybe notice there might be somebody up above there. There might be a guard over to the left. You're looking around and you're scanning to what's in front of you. And you're discovering a little more, and you're like, what, huh, something's happening? Oh my goodness, ah! Arr! What happened? Oh no, call an ambulance. And actually that's the sky, one of the skylight systems that's above. So what happened? Why didn't the designers anticipate this accident and fix the problem ahead of time? You know? There are only recommended practices. This was designed using illumination. It doesn't predict illuminance. It wasn't designed with illuminance in mind. That's part of the challenge.
And there's no tools available right now to the design community to help predict this particular issue. Let's look at the scene under 2200. There's no obvious visual hazard yet, and this is under the same lighting condition. Now, 2200 is what you were holding in front of you a while ago, all right? You could probably see most things in this room. So what happens if it's a few hours later? Something's starting to emerge. Right? Now we've got a little light coming in from this side of the building, and it's beginning to provide contrast, right? We're beginning to see something that's in the space. This is an actual photo of what was in the room, and I just sort of quickly mocked it together. Excuse my undersampling, Greg, of the daylight situation in the space. But it was certainly adequate to demonstrate what I was showing. There was a nice distraction for the person walking along there, because they were using that dark line as a reference point. We find the head of our, the principal investigator of our team has 2900 vision. Right, he heads the low vision lab in the Department of Psychology, University of Minnesota. He's a great resource. How are you getting from here to here, Gordon? I think there's a dark line over here. Why are you stepping on that manhole? Can you see it? Well, there's a dark spot, but statistically, there's not going to be a hole there. Watch. Oh, right. That's how he lives his life. So this view of that bench could have been avoided, right? In this case, it's not lighting that's the problem. We need somebody, the interior designer, right, to use a darker stain, right? You can still have your beautiful wood quality. There's many other ways to fix this, but it's not a lighting issue. So this is a design community issue, of which in this case, lighting isn't the culprit, or may not be the culprit. Any of you who were in Berkeley last year, I'm sorry. I'm repeating this one little sequence. So a different case study. Any guesses?
5 minutes would be okay.
Sorry?
Would 5 minutes be okay?
Yeah. Well, I am running over. Any guesses?
A finger?
This is a subway station in Washington, D.C. It's by a prominent university. And it's dangerous in there, right? The whole Washington subway system, if you've been in it, is a completely diffuse, low-light situation. Some actual photographs of the space. The floor and the granite, you know, are very high risk for somebody with low acuity, and modest risk for somebody with normal vision. So I added a street light to see how it would change things. It changed the 2600 vision to moderate risk and 2020 vision to low risk. And I bumped up its output and decreased the amount of energy going into the dome. So the total amount of energy used in the scene hasn't changed, just being redistributed. And that results in 2600 vision, which now has modest to low risk. So there's a way to adapt this environment. In this case, with lighting, the environment already exists. As I mentioned earlier, our work has a lot to do with human studies. That happens to be a blur goggle that we use. And then we update our pipeline. This is part of the pipeline, a little explanation of how we're using red. This is all in simulation. A blur takes place, the area of interest takes place. We limit it to 7 feet above the ground and 25 feet in front. And then we start to indicate what's visible with green lines in this older version and red lines for what isn't visible. Very different from what PCON does, right? This is our current iteration that walks through the pipeline. There's ground truth. We heard that word used earlier. It's just extracted from an octree. And then it's analyzed. And the red means you can't see it. The green stripe means you can see it. That's a bit of a close-up of it. This is an earlier version where we're working on. We're trying to say what is useful to look at. How can this information be best presented to a designer so that they can make a change and rerun it to the system. Visual texture, visual masking. You can see the image on your right is somewhat masked. We've done experiments recently with the impact of texture and locomotion and discovered that it's reduced, of course, when you're standing still, but actually motion increased the detectability of this step up. And so future work, we need to explore images that are off-axis. This is an interesting thing that has surfaced recently, luminance and patterns. You see that this is just changing the light source, how the pattern disappears on this side when it's equal luminance. This is only changing in the color of light, how it's revealing the pattern that's on the floor. What does that mean to us? I thought maybe if I blurred it at 20/30 vision where the lines themselves disappear, that it might help give an architect some idea about what frequency of pattern you should be using. But that's something we need to explore further. We need to know more about color contrast. I don't know if this is going to work, but there's a phenomenon that happens here. I'd like you to fixate on the center dark of the bullseye up there, and I'll just see if I can shoot this and get this going. Just watch the center of the bullseye. And I hope this is going to work. Keep watching the center of the bullseye. Okay, I think it's going to happen for you. Did something happen to the outside ring? Did it slow down or stop? It didn't. That's your vision when we get to equal luminescence. Something strange, the strange phenomena start to happen. So imagine that you're transitioning from one zone to another and there's a mosaic pattern on a wall that happens to be equal luminescent or on the floor. And as you're walking on it, it's moving at a different speed than you are, at least for the first 5 seconds of transition. That's something that we need to explore. Glare, you guys are experts at this, but I'm just going to make 2 comments on this. Small glare points, which are disruptive to normal vision, may have only minimal effect on low vision. It has to do with the scattering and how much energy there is, but there's not a whole lot of energy. It just gets diffused into like a little candle ball, fuzzy ball in their vision. It's not being disabled. The other part of this is, here's somebody's design that daylighting system in a museum quite beautifully. This is in D.C. in an art gallery. It's acceptable to full vision, but a number of people with low vision say that they lose complete vision in some of these environments. It's counterintuitive to the way that we deal with normal vision. So this becomes another part of our future studies, which we're going to begin in the fall. What about low vision and the world of glare? Adaptation for somebody walks into an environment. What is their adapted state? So we have some idea as to how to fine-tune the analysis. So universal accessibility and visual analysis, these are the things that we require: visual models, architectural models, lighting simulations, computational tools, building codes integrated into a tool that's accepted by architectural design professions. And so our work continues in this. Radiance is at the very core of it all. And thank you. That's a little summary about what we're up to with low vision. I'm just going to take 30 seconds if there is a question because I exceeded my time.
Well, we just have a break next, so I'm sure people can ask you during the break as well. But does anyone have an urgent question they want to ask Rob? It's all perfectly clear then.
Thanks, Rob.
So if you could pass your envelopes to the center.
The only thing I need back is the black and white chart. The rest of it, you're welcome to have a blind foil to walk around with today. Okay.